Welcome to episode 57 of Island CT Podcast.
A podcast about science, nature, technology, and education.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Patrick. And together we are the hosts of the Island CT Podcast.
So we have read this article. It's Troubled Treasures, and it talks about Burmese amber. And it's written by Joshua Sokol on May 24th of this year. And we are a little late getting it out because we read it and things happened. And then we reread it and things happened. But definitely an article. If you haven't read it, go back and read it.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Well, the other thing that happens is we read other things and then we start talking about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're like, oh, we really wanted to do that one.
Right.
Can't remember half the stuff. So it's news. It's a feature.
Right.
What they call, what AAAS calls a feature. So it's a fair bit longer.
Right. And it highlights a paleontologist in China called Xing Lida.
Would it be?
And that's where I could use some help in the pronunciation.
I should have asked Wei Ning.
Yeah.
X, I think I'd say it as an SH for us.
Okay. Xing?
But I don't know.
Okay.
Xing Lida. Lida, I have no idea how to pronounce. L-I-D-A.
And basically, this is a paleontologist who has received a lot of fame in China. He's discovered some dinosaur fossils. And now he's focused on amber, and he is going over to get Burmese amber.
Did you notice this is the second major article featuring him?
Yes.
In science?
Mm-hmm. He's also wrote a novel in the last year.
That's him. Oh, I neat. Have a picture of him from an earlier article. That's a lot better.
That's really cool.
This one is from
Footprint of Giants.
2017.
Right.
June 23rd.
So in the article mentions that in China, he has quite a bit of fame because of the recent findings he's had with fossils, dinosaur fossils.
Yeah. I just want to highlight something from that earlier article before we go on. They have a map of China and you see all these spots on it that are all different archaeological sites from Cretaceous, Jurassic, Triassic. And you figure out, okay, so there's a bunch of spots. And then it says, has investigated dinosaur, Xing Lida has investigated dinosaur tracks at more than 100 sites across. These are the sites he's visited.
Wow.
So it's like, yeah.
So I, you know, of course, I haven't seen any videos about them or anything.
No.
But one of the things they mentioned in the article is he convinced his parents to sell a summer home so they could give him money so he could invest it in getting a museum and and acquiring more fossils for research.
Yeah.
So obviously, this is a man with great passion.
Sure. Yeah.
And he is, and it must be contagious because he's receiving a lot of fame for it.
Yeah. Anyway, what else? Do you want me to take it or?
Did you want me to dig into
a few
things?
Yeah.
Okay. So the finds that he's getting is from the Cretaceous, and this amber, these amber mines that he's gathering, he's acquiring his specimens from, are really special because the amber is really preserving the fine detail, like of soft tissue. And they're very excited because it's giving them a lot of information that they have not had up to this point. And they're hoping that the fossils will give them some cellular or even some subcellular detail, which I think is very cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before moving on, so you said the word Cretaceous.
Yeah.
So the end is really clear to me because you figure the asteroid, the nightmares, that's the end of the Cretaceous. So mm-hmm. there's no problem there.
Right.
But I was looking on Wikipedia, and I think it said the start of it is like 150 million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So wasn't there a humongous, isn't the biggest ever extinction like 250 million years ago?
Right.
So that leaves, and the Jurassic is before the Cretaceous.
Right.
And then yes, there's something else with correct. Dinosaurs before that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that only leaves 100,000. So one thing's, I mean, the Cretaceous must be around 80 million years long. That's mm-hmm. really cool when you think that it hasn't even been that long yet since the asteroid hit the Yucatan.
Right, right. Yeah. So some of the things that I thought was interesting, I'll just keep on mentioning some neat facts that I got out of it.
Yeah.
One was the quantity of organisms that they got from there, from that particular location, is particularly rich. And they think... Yeah.
Tiana?
Yeah.
Is that the name of the place? Tiana?
So, and I'm looking for the quote, but it's something like, for every kilogram that they're mining out, they're getting 46 specimens from that kilogram of amber. Like, that just blows my mind.
Yeah.
And
Tanai is the place. So was that from this time, or was that from that way earlier in the 1920s?
I thought it was from this time, but I could be wrong. Okay.
Anyway, but it's per kilogram.
Right, per
kilogram. So that's a huge chunk.
It is, but
it's still. Yeah.
I'm amazed.
Yeah.
The other thing is the interesting things they found out about insects. Yeah. So they got a lot of good information about insects, particularly they mentioned specifically about the prehistoric... spiders.
Yes.
And some of the things they found about the spiders, and I know you have some information about this, but that they still had the silk spinners.
That they already had.
Yeah.
Or you're right. Still had.
Yeah.
So if I remember correctly, the ones that they found had the spinnerets. But the point is, they had like a tail like a scorpion's.
Yes.
And those spiders had been mostly extinct by that mm-hmm. time. And they'd been for like, I don't know, millions of years. So this was already on its way out, this type mm-hmm. of spider. But because it had the spinnerets, from that they deduced that very early on, the spiders had spinnerets. They had to. Otherwise, it wouldn't also be present. If it was a later adaptation, it wouldn't have been present in this one that was, or you know, that the newer ones had diverged from
and
in evolution.
The other interesting part that I thought was really cool is that the amber captured the moment when insect groups switched from feeding from gymnosperms to flowering plants. Right. And I thought that was a cool that they actually caught that transition time.
Right.
And that's very lucky, you know.
Yeah.
And it's going to give a lot of information. Yeah. And they think about it's really going to give them a lot of information about that extraordinary diversity of flowers and the co-evolution of the insects and the flowers together.
Yeah.
It'll
yeah.
give them more information.
There was
about that
one part about the pollen grains that were stuck to like a scarab or something that seemed like they were too big to... Do you remember that part?
Oh, I,
they
I
were
don't.
Too
There's
big.
So much in here.
I know.
I had to focus on certain things.
I didn't totally understand. There was a section where it said pollen grains were found stuck on this beetle, mm-hmm. and they appeared to be too big to be windblown. And I think they thought they were actually from gymnosperms.
Right.
And so somehow, what I didn't understand is gymnosperms are not supposed to be pollinated by insects.
No.
Right. So that was kind of curious. But maybe mm-hmm. they weren't from gymnosperms.
I was thinking maybe the transition that they were focusing on, because that's what they're seeing is that transition. Anyway, so there are a few of the highlights that I found from it. There's many more in here. So what are some that stood out to you?
Well, going back to I don't think that the whole social aspect, I hate that that's part of what I found interesting, but mm-hmm.
Where I was going next,
backing up, mm-hmm. I don't know. I didn't read in the article something that made me think that there was more insects or more animals in this amber compared to others.
Okay. I thought...
My impression was that the way it was described at one point is that what makes this place different, Tanai in northern Myanmar, is that there are so many pieces of amber mm-hmm. compared to other places.
Right.
And some of them, it was described as the size of cantaloupes.
Yeah.
And those two things are what you can't find anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Just the sheer amount of it and individual pieces being so humongous.
Right. So the only other places where they're doing this type of mining mm-hmm. is in the Dominican Republic, which I thought was kind of cool.
You mean digging holes straight down? Or
Amber mining.
Well, the Baltic.
Yeah. They mentioned in the article is that the Dominican Republic. And maybe it stood out to me because that's where my mother and father went. And they brought me back a piece of amber.
Cool.
But when they brought it back in a ring, they're like, they said the ones with the bugs in them were much more expensive, but we didn't want to give you one with a bug in it. So they missed the point. Yeah. I thought it was fun. Yeah. Anyway. Okay.
Yeah, so the places for amber are, like you said, Dominican Republic,
mm-hmm.
the Baltic, like from ancient times.
Yeah.
And
forgot about the Baltic.
In China itself. Yeah. And there's a couple other places. A lot of the mines that used to be big have been tapped out, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually when the Chinese mines started to get tapped out that the Myanmar stuff... Well, there's several things, right? There's political stuff happening that made it take off in Myanmar also.
Right.
I remember... remember we were talking about this? I haven't reviewed it, so it's going to be a little bit fuzzy, but the fact that the name amber is a misnomer, and it's because of the... So first of all, when you dig for amber, you find this stuff that's covered in this blue crust, and it has mm-hmm. to do with how amber forms, and you have to take it off, and then you find the amber inside, and you polish it, you know, so you can see into it. But a lot of the amber ends up, you know, through layering and then erosion by the sea, it ends up in the sea. And then it gets, that crust gets weathered by ocean waves and stuff, and it gets polished like beach stones, petals.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have been finding it from ancient times on the shores. Right. And so they associated it with the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's Pliny the Elder had some writings that I have probably from Wikipedia, mm-hmm. but where there was some evidence that they definitely knew this was not necessarily associated always with the sea and probably associated with resin from trees, mm-hmm. right? But the other, and of course they called it electron, hence electron. I can't remember, but our word electrons comes from amber, the Greek word for amber, and you know, because of rubbing amber and fur together and getting static electricity and stuff. But because of it coming from the sea, the word amber came with association of ambergris from sperm whales, which was another, I mean, it's different, but it's right. waxy. And this is obviously not rocks, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that whole historical part going back to ancient times was really interesting to me.
Neat. Okay. And we should mention about the social issues surrounding this whole situation.
Yeah, so that's the more recent history. Mm-hmm. So let me see. The first time people came across amber from Burma, I think, was in the early 1900s. And mm-hmm. someone brought it back. And there's a collection at a museum in the UK. But then there was like nothing for a really long time.
Right.
And there's been conflict in the area. Mostly it's is it Kachin State?
Yep.
Is that what it's called?
They even have the tally of species. It doesn't jump till more recently, in the last 10 years.
Yeah. But what's the...
Yep.
Is it Kachin?
Kachin.
Ah, Kachin. Okay, so Kachin State in northern Myanmar is where it's located, and there's a separatist movement there, and they're battling with the regulars of the Burmese mm-hmm. government. And the poor people that live there have to deal with both sides trying to tax what they're doing and
right.
so on. But I guess at some point there was a ceasefire. And is it a Swedish company went in? No, a Canadian company went in
mm-hmm.
and started to mine there. And that's when people started to really notice, wow, there's a lot of stuff here. Mm-hmm. And then it got closed again, but the word got out. And then the Chinese mines for amber started to get tapped out. And the way I understand it happens now is Myanmar has... law that says you're not allowed to export jewels.
Right.
But no, you're not allowed to export fossils.
Mm-hmm.
But you're allowed to export jewels. Mm-hmm. And so and it's just a question of labeling it. So they label it a jewel instead of a fossil, and then they're exporting it that way. And basically, I mean, goes from these mines in Tanai to either this market in Myanmar close by called Mitkita. Mm-hmm. Let me see, I have it here. Mitkina. It's awfully difficult to pronounce. Mitkina. Mitkina. And then right across the border in China, to a market in Tangchong. And the thing is that when they go to cross the border, it's okay from the Burmese point of view because of that loophole and everybody's fine mm-hmm. with it. On the Chinese side, it's fine to import the stuff, but it's got to be taxed.
Right.
And that's, you know, no one wants to declare it. And they were saying that's a phenomenal number. They were saying that they think that the market is like $1 billion a year for just the amber from that region. And all the local authorities are just, they're not just looking the other way. They're actually policing the market in China because they just want to keep it going and having all be good because
it's so huge.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And when they talk about the individual people that are mining it, like how they're mining it is just scary, where they'll go down into a hole no wider than their body.
Yeah.
And they could go down like 100 meters into the ground.
Yeah, that blew me away. That's like 10 Olympic swimming pool high jumps.
Yeah, or what I think of is a 30-story building.
Yeah.
You know, that's just like, whoa.
Although that's the... That's the deepest they go.
Right.
So they go straight down until they find amber, and then they start digging sideways.
Right.
And then when that taps out, they go dig somewhere else.
And when he was talking to the people who work in the mines, they were saying, you know, healthcare is on us. If we get hurt, it's our cost.
Yeah.
And so it just makes it that they're in a very dangerous business.
Yeah.
Especially when you see the setup, and I can't get the picture that I noticed of them setting up by
the actual mine.
Yeah.
When you look down.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's on page, what's the page number there?
Page 725.
725 in the top right. That is an amazing, looking straight down.
Yeah.
I mean, you're only looking down, what, 3 meters?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's going down 100 meters?
I know. And then the spindly little rope.
I assume the person climbs down and the rope is to bring up buckets and stuff.
Maybe.
But I don't really know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have to. But anyway... Fascinating article.
Yeah.
And just well done to bring the science, politics,
there's
the social aspects of what it takes.
Yeah. So there's another really interesting thing about, like, why is the market so high?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously people want the amber for jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
And there's collectors that want it just to have. So that creates a bidding situation,
mm-hmm.
which drives up the prices, right? And on the other side, there's the scientists that are just desperate to get all this information from and so you have this weird situation where the scientist, like this guy, Xing Lida,
mm-hmm.
goes to the market and he's got his cell phone and he sees an interesting piece. And it's really interesting, but it's fetching a high price.
Mm-hmm.
So he calls up one of the collectors that's a friend of his and has mm-hmm. he's dealt with before. He snaps a photo of the amber with the piece with his phone, sends it to the guy. The guy okays the price. Then he uses the phone to transfer money to the guy who's selling it.
Right.
Takes the amber, and then it becomes part of the guy's collection.
Right.
And then what? I mean, that's the interesting thing, right? Because the collectors don't want to make it accessible to museums. From their point of view, supposedly, it's like, well, China does not give any tax breaks for this,
mm-hmm.
right? And they say they're going to set up museums, but, like, is it going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, there's lots of efforts, but, you know, it's not in your hands.
Right.
On the other hand, if the scientists don't use it, even though it's in the private collection, it's like so much information could be there.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, the other thing that's interesting is, like, how do you date the stuff? Because we're saying... 99 million years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's from just a single sample of clay, like, or ash or something that was covering a sample from way back. And it's very difficult to get stuff, you know, to go there scientifically and look for other, you know.
Right.
Other than the amber, to look at, you know, what the environment's down in the holes and stuff, and get samples to try to date a lot of this, you're getting pieces totally out of context. So,
They were using I just found they were also using volcanic ash to date it.
Right, right. Because
that has a chemical signature that's unique to the volcano, and they're able to keep track of those,
right.
Which I find amazing. The other thing that we didn't mention was that there was a controversy between ownership and research, and that you usually have to own the fossils that you're using as part of your research.
It's got to be owned by a museum.
Right. It has to be owned by a museum or so that there's public access to it to verify. Yeah. And that's kind of, that's really being put into question here.
Well, everybody's publishing without.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's, and the owners of the amber, the collectors, are basically making promises about what's going to happen.
Right.
So that the stuff can be published and people are checking off, but there's no guarantee.
No. You know?
On the other hand, we're finding out all this stuff.
I know.
So there's the, like, I reread that part about the feathers.
Mm-hmm.
So I still don't totally understand it, but one of the things they found is in normal fossils, they mm-hmm. found all these feathers that are totally flattened down.
Right.
And in modern birds that are fossilized, they're also totally flattened down, but we know that those have a central shaft that's tubular.
Mm-hmm.
So we assume that's the way it was in those very early birds that are extinct. And then they found some in amber, and they found it. It's not a hollow tube. It's like a, I think it, they described like a U-shape or something. I can't remember exactly. Now, this is what I don't get. And therefore, it must be a structure that would just snap into place. And I was like, what?
How can you say that?
It didn't make sense to me.
Right.
Like, I know, I understand some people found out something interesting, but I was mm-hmm. like, what?
Yeah, I totally, I was on the, I was in the same.
And then I love the hell ants.
Yeah.
There's no information about them. And I thought the description, but I just love the concept. They have these horns.
Yeah.
I looked them up on Wikipedia. There's a super order.
Mm-hmm.
Where the hell? Oh, I don't have it up here. Or not super order, family that they're a subfamily of, I think. Anyway. The other thing is, how do you investigate them without destroying the amber and well, destroying the specimen?
Right. And they were using some imaging. Ah, here we go. Because I remember reading that. So they're using
Synchrotron
imagery. Yeah. And they're also using intense X-rays that cause chemical elements in the sample to fluoresce as distinct wavelengths.
I don't understand how that works, but I think,
don't either.
But I think the synchrotron imaging. So cyclotron is like a particle is moving perpendicular, is being accelerated perpendicular to the way it's moving. So usually in a magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
Synchrotron, I think, from what I was reading just recently because of this, this really sends you in all different directions.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the same thing, but there's added effects if the particle's moving at relativistic speeds.
Mm-hmm.
And so the synchrotron imaging / X-rays that they describe here, what's actually happening is they're using a synchrotron to accelerate particles that are relativistic, and the energies are so high from the radiation that they get X-rays out of them.
Right.
So the synchrotron part is just a source of X-rays.
Got it.
So basically they're X-raying the amber using a synchrotron to generate the X-rays. That's
awesome.
I understand it.
So one of the other cool facts that came out of the find is they have the first turtle.
Did they?
Yeah. So it even says Hermes and then the subject. Okay. Which has been the first turtle in amber.
Where are you seeing this?
Oh, sorry.
No, that's the fake.
Sorry, it was the fake.
I thought I
shame on me. Sorry. I was reading very quickly trying to get through.
They didn't mention a lot about fakery. I suspect that's not going to be a humongous problem because it's probably pretty easy to fake something so that someone will buy it as jewelry. And the extra effort that would require for you to fake something that someone would scientifically not be able to catch it.
Right.
Why? Because the scientists are always paying way less.
Right.
So, yeah.
Neat.
Anyway. A cool article.
Yeah.
A lot more in there.
There is. There's so much more. And, and we only touch the surface of all the materials that could be.
I think we covered the feature pretty well.
We did.
There's not a huge ton more in the article, but it just sends you off in all these different directions. Like when I first read it, I don't remember half of what I was reading, but I went into this historical thing about how they dig mines straight down and mm-hmm. then out. And when you don't go deep and you do that, that's like a really typical way that mining started in prehistory.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the least efficient and one of the most dangerous.
Right.
And you end up with a bell-shaped opening underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain places in the world where you see them at regular intervals. And people think that it's sinkholes.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's collapsed places where
people have been mining. Mines have been going. Yeah. Yeah. Neat.
So.
It's really cool.
Anyway.
Okay.
So that's it for the article.
Yes.
We didn't have any administrative stuff. We jumped right in.
We did. Because if we didn't, we would miss it. So we have some exciting things coming up.
Yep.
Vacation.
We're going to... I just looked up Bear Island again.
Did you?
Yeah. So we're not going to Bear Island this year.
No.
But maybe we'll do a podcast from Canaan Valley.
Yeah.
In the summer. It'll be our first time ever.
Yeah.
So that we're going off to visit Isaac in another 3 days or so.
Yeah.
And then a week at Canaan Valley.
Right. And we're going to try to do a soda when we were out there. So we are going to try to do summits on the air.
Yep.
And basically, we hope to use a new radio that's supposed to be arriving today.
Tonight, sometime.
And we'll be trying to find where these summits are. And hopefully we'll get one on the air. That would be so exciting.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss Bear Island this year.
Me too. I have to say, we've gone to Bear Island probably for over 10 years.
I think so.
And this is the first year we haven't. And I have to say, it's kind of sad.
No restrooms, portable water, no concession, no drinking water. But I mean, that's not the issue. The issue is they're not allowing people to camp, I don't think, yet. So.
No.
Anyway, we didn't know when group camping and some beachfront campsite, closed until July 31st now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because of Hurricane Florence.
Right.
So. But we had to book for Canaan Valley, and at the time we thought they probably wouldn't be open, so
yeah,
made sense.
Yep.
And then we get back, you might be going up to Canada,
mm-hmm.
but then we have the Art of Championships,
yeah,
which will be a lot of fun.
Which will be exciting. Pat and I'll be the roadies.
Yeah.
We'll do what they tell us to do. Anyway, so I think that wraps up everything.
Okay, well, thank you for listening to the Island CT podcast.
Make sure you check out our website for upcoming events.
Yeah, and for stuff we're doing. We're still working at all sorts of fixing things and stuff. I don't put up stuff very often just because we're so busy still fixing stuff. But eventually the course timing system, we didn't talk about that at all.
No, we didn't. Yeah. It's done.
Well, we need to... So it's been used for an entire season.
Yes.
But it hasn't been used in its final form that we just finished now. It's got a Raspberry Pi running headless, and it's acting as a wireless access. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk about it when we first
start. We'll talk about it when we start back again.
Anyway.
And hopefully we will have some awesome pictures from Dolly Sods and around there.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Okay.
Okay, we're finishing it.
Yes.
Goodbye.